Coming up on this episode of Nintendo Cartridge Society, we open up a new box of Legos and find it's full of Skulltulas. It's dangerous to go alone, so the Nintendo Cartridge Society goes with you. Welcome to Nintendo Cartridge Society. My name is Patrick Ellers, and I am joined, as I'm always joined, by my co-host, Mark Mitchell. We've got a good show for you today. We're going to be talking about the news from the week, including rumors of a Lego Zelda set. And then on Thursday, we're deciding what Diamond in the Rough games should get remakes, just like another code Recollection did. But Mark, in the meantime, how's it going?
It's going great. It's been rainy in LA.
It has been, yes.
Which tends to make like the short winter days feel even shorter.
Right.
How have you fared in standard time this year? Did the transition... I know I'm late to this because the transition happened in November.
Wait. So we're talking about the time change right
now?
Yeah,
uh-huh.
Okay. We're talking about the time change and my adjustment to it here 3 months later as the days are getting longer.
Yeah, that's right. And as we live
in sunny Los Angeles, where it has not been negative 8 degrees or whatever it's been everywhere else in the country.
Everything you've said is 100% true.
It's been tough, I'll be honest. Here's the truth.
Uh-huh.
The truth, Mark, is that I've spent the last 2 weeks in like a writing hole, butting up against a Ninja Turtles deadline, which I've met now and I feel great about. But I have been like the world has been shut off to me. I've been in you know, like a sensory deprivation tank, floating in a shallow pool of mutagenic ooze. And I've turned into a creature that only writes and does not photosynthesize. Also does not paint pictures. I know stuff has been going on outside. Every now and then I look and it's raining.
Uh-huh.
But is it day? Is it night? Is it hot? Is it cold? Kind of doesn't matter. I don't know. How have you been adjusting to the weather change?
It went fine for me.
Mark, I got a bone to pick.
Okay, yeah, bring it on.
It's not with you. I'm not upset with you.
Uh-huh, thank you.
Okay. This is not, I don't believe, your fault. So because I've been doing a lot of writing, I've been listening to just like a lot of music, right? On my computer, Apple Music, thanks. I've noticed that a lot of album art on Apple Music is now animated. So like I first noticed it with like a Shins record or something, where it's just like the regular graphic, but then like parts of it were like kind of wiggling around and like moving.
I don't know where this is going, but I can tell you this is, it's not my fault.
Okay, great.
Yeah, I can confirm.
And I was like, okay, that's a little weird, but like I don't know, I'm not going to complain about like the, you know, sanctity of the art of you know, Shin's record from 20 years ago. But then later I'm listening to Birth of the Cool, Miles Davis, right? I'm listening to a record from like 1961 or whatever. And that album art is like the words are like zooming in on it and like flipping around. And I'm like, there's no way Miles Davis wanted this to look like this. What's going on? Why are we doing it? And it like made me mad.
I do wonder how that stuff is handled.
Yes.
Like, is it in collaboration with the label? Is it like, yeah, how is that stuff decided?
How is it decided? It didn't make me happy. it's just like there was an aspect of like, and I know I'm listening to music on my computer, but like the screenification of it.
Uh-huh.
I was just like, stop transmitting that extra data. Right? Like I just want the music and like the graphic. Still graphic. I don't need these letters whooshing around.
Yeah. I hear you. Not my fault.
Right. It also seems like maybe you're not worried about it. You don't seem to care.
I'm not worried about it, but I also haven't been in like a hermetically sealed chamber where I'm not painting a picture. I'm worried about writing.
Right.
That maybe has a little bit to do with it.
You're saying I went crazy.
I'm saying it's possible.
I was looking for things to complain about. Is that what you're saying? If you would like to hear us complain about stuff, go to patreon.com/NintendoCartridgeSociety, where we've got this Patreon, and you can support us there if you like. If you support us at the 8-bit or the 16-bit levels, you will get access to our once-a-month episodes of miniseries that we are that we put out. This month and this year, we have started the NCS Arcade show, where we're going to be playing games from NSO and NSO Plus Expansion Pack that Mark and I have never beaten before.
That's right, and we're starting with The Legend of Zelda the Minish Cap, and we're going to be recording that episode this weekend.
Yes, it came up in the Discord. Where's that episode? Again, I've been in this pod for the last couple weeks. So we are recording this weekend. So if you have any impressions, any thoughts, any observations about The Legend of Zelda the Minish Cap, which is our first episode, you should email us at NintendoCartridgeSociety@gmail.com. Mark, are you anticipating that episode? Are you excited about it?
I'm really excited about it. I think NCS Arcade in general is going to be a lot of fun, talking about games that we don't talk about that much on the show because we've never beaten them before.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a good time. Also, you can go back and check out our other mini series like NCS Detective Club, where we talk about the great detective shows of television, and NCS Goes Broadway, where we talk about some Broadway and off-Broadway musicals.
And if you would like to continue that sort of conversation online with like-minded people who also want to talk about Nintendo and stuff, you can join the Discord, and you can do so by emailing us at NintendoCartridgeSociety@gmail.com, and I will send you an invitation. It's very, very easy. Mark, the thing that I've been working on is, of course, this Ninja Turtles encyclopedia called the TMNT Sourcebook, the first issue of which comes out on February 21st. It's very cool. I'm very excited about it. Very proud of the work I did on it. So check that out at your pre-order it from your local comic book stores or wherever you buy comics.
Yeah, very cool. I'm very excited for this.
I just gotta remember to like actually plug this thing because it keeps slipping my mind. Right now it's just a burden on me. You know what I mean? A burden I love, and which is going to be very cool. All right, Mark, let's get into what we've been playing this week. So on Friday, another Code Recollection came out, and we both have put a little bit of time into it, but is it okay if we knock my other games out of the way?
Yeah, let's do it.
I have not had a lot of time to game this last week, but I did play two other games in addition to starting another Code Recollection. One, I got into a text conversation with some friends of mine about card games in video games. It was mostly revolving around like the games in Final Fantasy, right? Like Triple Triad and the other one in Final Fantasy VIII. Doesn't matter what they are. But I am usually, Mark, I don't know about you, I hate those sorts of things. Where I'm like, I don't want to learn another set of mechanics.
Yeah, I usually don't spend that much time in them.
And so there is a card game within Shovel Knight King of Cards. So the third expansion to Shovel Knight had within it its own card game. And I brought that up in the text conversation, and someone was like, what does it play like? And I was like, I have no idea, because I'd never played a hand of the game. And so I went in just to like, so I could tell them what it was like. I had fun for like 20 minutes and then was like, I got to get back to work. So I played a little bit of Joustice this
weekend.
How does
it play?
Okay. So it plays, it's more like a positional thing, right? So you have these cards that have arrows on them, pointing up, down, left, or right. And what you're trying to do is you're trying to play cards in ways that they move other cards onto these little gems. And so if your card is on top of a gem, you get a point at the end of the match. And so it's all about like it's almost more dominoes-y in that you're like physically moving things around and like matching them up and trying to take advantage of space, control space that way. So it's neat, and because I, you know, played the heck out of King of Cards, I had like earned all these like special cards, and so I was kind of like plowing through some of the challenges there, where like these guys don't stand a chance against me. I'm too good for this, and so I think someday I'll go back and play more Joustice.
Can you play online?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
I would guess not. There's is there online play in any of the Is Shovel Knight Showdown online enabled? I would hope, right? It's like a fighting game. I don't know. I would be the authority on that if either of us was. But I don't know, so I'm not. But regardless, just to say that Shovel Knight as a package, there's so much to Shovel Knight.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Treasure Trove. Like it's just out of control how much there is to do in that game. And then the other thing, Mark, I don't know really what drove me to do this. It's part of my I'm buying everything that Nintendo puts out this year sort of ethos. Where I was like, you know what I didn't even try out and what franchise I'm generally don't give a fair shake to at all is Pokemon. Didn't play Scarlet or Violet at all. I bought Pokemon Scarlet and I played it for like 3 hours this weekend. Just like running around, catching Pokemon, battling them. I beat the first gym. It's fun. It is janky. Like it is, it's shocking how jangly it is, where it's just like, ooh, this thing's barely holding together. But it's undeniably fun and genuinely does feel like it is open and free and like you can do whatever you want in that
That's
world.
Really cool. That seems like that's the general consensus on
yeah.
it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not saying anything new.
Who'd you pick as your starter?
I picked Quaxly. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know... First of all, I don't remember like where we landed on it when they were announced. If there was one of them that we liked over the others, they're all pretty good, right? Like, I think the only one that I was like, I don't really know if I'm excited about this guy is the Fue Coco. He's your favorite, right?
Which one is Fue Coco?
He's the little like fire
crocodile thing.
Yeah,
yeah. So my memory, I can't remember if I ended up falling in love with Fue Coco or not, but my memory is that in the immediate
right.
after their reveal,
yes.
had questions about, is Fue Coco wearing a diaper?
Is Fue Coco wearing a diaper? Great question.
And I think we came around to no.
Right.
But that's my memory of
the fact that
Fue
you have
Coco.
To ask the question, right? Like, I think it's
problematic.
Yeah. And then there's the little, the kitty, the little grass kitty, whose name I forget. And yeah, so I genuinely didn't know when I turned it on, like who I was going to pick. And so I kind of like agonized over the decision for a little while. And then I was like, okay, now I'm going to go with Quaxly. He's like kind of a moody duck. I like that. He's evolved once now and to, you know, whatever the second form of Quaxly is. It's always the thing with your starter Pokemon where you're like, I love him, he's cute. And then like he changes and you're like, oh, why? I want him to be cute.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
But so, I don't know. This is not me like, this is not me discovering Pikmin, right? This is just like I'm messing around with the newest Pokemon game, which is now over a year old. I'm having a good time.
So let's talk about another code recollection.
Yes. So I have played very little of this game. I'd say maybe 45 minutes.
Okay.
And I played it in bed while I was like winding down after a day of being crazy. So I want to hear mostly about your impressions playing another code recollection.
Yeah, so I'm about three and a half hours in. And I think this is such an odd duck of a game.
It feels weird.
And
yes.
Such an odd duck for a like kind of marquee Nintendo release, like the first like Nintendo release of the year.
Yes, even by the like metric of the first release of the year being like a little bit of a strange thing or like
sometimes,
a rehash or
yeah.
like a niche product of some, uh-huh. of some kind. And of course I, you know, lump something like Super Mario 3D World plus
right.
Bowser's Fury.
And like Fire Emblem Engage.
Well, Fire Emblem Engage I think absolutely belongs in that bucket where it's like, this is a niche product for weirdos. But yeah, I mean, this feels like a niche product for weirdos.
Yeah, well, it's... So I never played Touch Memory, which mm-hmm. is the name in America of the Nintendo DS version of this, and we never got the Wii sequel. And as far as I can tell, again, I'm only 3 hours in, like I guess I was expecting it to be a little bit like the Famicom Detective Club releases, in that it's like, hey, here's two discrete experiences. But it seems like possibly they've like sewn it together to be a
yes.
single game now.
Well, because you're not able to choose which one you start with.
Exactly.
Like, you just start playing the game.
Yeah.
Which is, I also thought was very interesting, because you also can't buy, like, the thing with Famicom Detective Club is you could have purchased those games separately, right? And also the second one that came out is actually a prequel, so like, how would you order them anyway? Like, they made the right choice with Famicom Detective Club, and I guess time will tell if they made the right choice with Another Code Recollection. But like, yeah, I mean, I'm struggling with the game, and I struggled a little less when I changed the voice acting to Japanese.
I did that about 30 seconds in.
I really, really struggled with the English language performances.
And I can't speak to the quality of, like, the Japanese voice acting, but the fact that, like...
It offends my ears less.
I can't... Yeah, like, you know, like, yeah. It just becomes part of the soundscape instead
yes.
of... Yeah, no, I agree completely. I think, like, what's so... One thing as I was playing it, because in the beginning I really struggled with it, and even, like, 3.5 hours in, I'm enjoying my time with it, but I am... Still, I'm just constantly like, this is such a weird choice to bring this game back in, like, a package that, like, a presentation that is not, like, overly polished. It's not like it runs poorly
yes, right.
or anything like that. It just feels very budget title in the animations.
Yes.
And, yeah.
Well, and it also, like... But it is a sort of like reimagination of how you interact with those environments, right? Like the original game was a lot more like touch screen. You weren't like free roaming around 3D environments in those games. So like the fact that they changed it to you are almost in like a third person adventure kind of game thing, but it feels like an old version of that. Do you know what I mean? Like
yeah.
It feels like it is... anachronistic on like a different timeline.
Yeah, it's very strange. Like it feels the thing I was thinking about is that you and I have said, wouldn't it be great if they made a new Famicom Detective Club, right? And
yes.
those games, I think they sold. I think Another Code Recollection is proof that they sold pretty good. The Famicom Detective Club remake.
Sure,
like for,
sure.
You know, for what they were.
Right.
I think they sold pretty good. But there isn't really another, like, Famicom Detective Club that they
right.
could remake. And so, but my headcanon for this is that the success of those, the relative success of those, is what made them be like, yes, let's go ahead and remake Another Code and its sequel to in this new package. Because we know that there is an audience out there for this sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's a totally different kind of jank than Famicom Detective Club had.
Yes.
Like, there are some, and these are things that I, from my understanding, are not in the original games, but they added like an optional hint system,
mm-hmm.
which would have gone a long way in Famicom Detective Club, because the hint system, which I've used a couple of times, is actually really good because it's progressive. So if you just need a little bit of a hint, you can like pull that up and it gives you one hint and it kind of like puts you in the right direction.
Yeah, that's
and then there's also other like quality of life stuff, like if you want a directional arrow that's always telling you, pointing
yeah,
you like
you can
where
just
to go,
click it on the
you can turn
stick,
it on
yeah.
like stuff like that. Like they've done a good job in that way. I went back because in the game there is a like a device that the character Ashley, who's your main character, is given, and she It's like a futuristic switch looking
yeah.
type thing. And so I went back to watch some footage of Touch Memory to be like, or Trace Memory, might be Trace Memory.
Oh boy.
To be like, oh, what?
Is it just a DS?
Is it just a DS? And it
yeah.
is. It
yeah.
is just a DS. And so like, that's kind of fun. But in watching that footage, I noticed that like the presentation is very different between the DS and the Switch version. Like the DS version, probably because of like limitations,
mm-hmm.
it's really like stark. Like there's a lot of darkness in the illustrations and
oh,
like
interesting.
Characters standing in front of just like dark background. So it's really like shadowy. It has the art style is a touch more like realistic in its illustration, whereas this remake is much more like cartoony.
It's brighter. Well, it's definitely brighter. Like even any like thumbnail or like the box image for this game, like the overwhelming color is white, right? Like things sort of like fade into like a foggy background, which I think already like casts it in like a different tonality than something with like more black backgrounds, like you were describing.
Yeah, like it is. So, you know, that's an interesting choice. It also seems like it's, and this is just based on a little bit of the DS footage I watched, but it seems like it streamlines some of the dialogue stuff. Mm. And so it makes it a little more presentational. And so in the remake, there is a lot, like some of it is like visual novel-ish, where you're just watching these interactions happen. And then there's occasionally right. times where you can like quote unquote ask questions, but you're really just, there's a list of options and it's not like it's a dialogue tree that you're like drilling down to. It's
just
like,
makes you select each option.
Yeah, yeah. And then they say what they're going to say about it. And in that way, like the game is very, so far it is very linear, not in a bad way where you're like, okay, I know the solution is in this room because the game won't let you
right,
leave
right, right.
if you have not like completed what you need to complete. There are some collectibles, like things that you're trying to scan with your device that add like additional color to the story. Another thing that made me think of Famicom Detective Club is that the subject matter, I mean, it's not like super dark, but there's murder and, you know, there's...
I mean, it's right in the beginning of the game. You get like flashbacks to her like hiding in a closet and like her father's got a gun, right? Is that, right. Am I reading that right?
Yeah.
So like, you know, it's, yeah, it's scary, intense stuff.
Yeah. And so I'm enjoying it. It in some ways feels like, they are giving me that Famicom Detective Club that I crave. But in other ways, the game is very different. Like Famicom Detective Club is not as like puzzle focused. Like it really is just kind of a like that is more about like dialogue trees and talking to the right people in the right order and like looking, scanning for clues.
Yeah.
And this is more like it's a mix between Resident Evil puzzles. I'd say that's about the level of difficulty that they are. Maybe even like Babies First.
Well, some tigers have a red eye and some tigers have a blue eye. So, okay, let me ask you this, because one of the things I really liked, like really liked, and I think carried Famicom Detective Club for me, both games, is that they were full of characters that I, you know, really thought were like interesting or fun and like kind of complicated, and I was like trying to figure them out a lot of the time. Remember, like, is his name Hamada, the doctor?
The doctor.
Yeah. I mean, like, right? Like, there are characters from those games that, you know, 3 or 4 years later, we still remember. In the first 45 minutes that I've played, I've not found an attachment to the characters that I've experienced thus far.
Yeah.
Another code.
Yeah, I think that's fair. They're all pretty, they're definitely not as like quirky or interesting. And there's way less of them.
Sure.
Way less. Because you're on basically an abandoned island trying to like figure out.
And you're not interrogating people.
Like trying to figure out what's like people are missing and you're kind of looking for it and trying to put like the pieces together. They're very different games. I don't really like. The comparison is more in my mind between the two than you're like, oh yeah, these are comparative experiences. So,
but I mean, I think the experiences have to be compared, right? Like it's the same niche, right? Of like obscure Nintendo game that not a lot of people had access to, being remade, largely narrative focused. Like they fit into the same bucket.
Weirdly, I feel like Famicom and. Again, they're so different because this one you're actually controlling the characters. A lot of times it's in first person. You're doing puzzles. You're manipulating the environment. You're like exploring things in a way that Famicom Detective Club did not. The presentation of Famicom Detective Club feels much more polished to me. But it goes back to it's like, is this a $60 experience? I haven't finished it yet, right?
Right.
But I feel like.
But that is what you paid for it.
But it is what I paid for it. I haven't finished it, so I don't know how long it is. I don't know how like it goes. But it's like, yeah, I think so. As long as you kind of like know what you're getting into. Because I think from Nintendo's point of view, are they expecting this to sell a million copies?
They couldn't possibly.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
But I think they're like, well, if we sold this at $30, are we, or like $50,
right,
is that going to increase sales any? And I don't think it would. I think like maybe you would get some curious people who are like, for like 40 yeah. bucks, yeah, I'll yeah. check this out. But for the most part, it is a niche product.
Yes.
That we, like we said at the beginning, for weirdos that they love putting in January.
Is that how we should be selling this show? As a niche product for weirdos?
Yeah. Lovable weirdos.
Yeah.
But, and so it's like, yes. Like, am I glad this exists? I am. I'm happy to be able to play this. I think it's fascinating that they like unearth this from a developer that doesn't exist anymore, which right. we'll like talk about a little bit in the news section. But
that sort of thing is very encouraging to me, where it's like products that you have not thought about in a long time from studios that don't exist anymore could come back.
And I really do think that because Famicom Detective Club was those remakes were on a relative basis successful, that is the reason why we got this.
Yeah.
Because otherwise
why?
It's fascinatingly baffling that this game exists, and it's not for everybody. This
right.
is not like a, you know, like a Nintendo, it's a different kind of Nintendo product. It's not that it's not polished, it's just that what's polished is so janky.
Sure, yeah. Well, and like, I always think about in terms of Nintendo games, like what's fun about it. And like, I don't know that I've discovered what's fun about Another Code just yet, but I think what is fun about it can be totally divorced from the like 3D free roaming and like voice acted, you know, whatever. Like, I think even with what's bad about it, it's just like Pokemon, frankly, right? Like, where like those games are janky too. And you're like, well, but the fun part of it is still fun. If that is true of Another Code, and again, I'm less than an hour in, Mark's only 3 hours in, do you think the fun is still in there?
Yeah, I mean, I'm having the fun.
Sure.
I'm enjoying myself. Like, I like the puzzles. I'm interested in the story. It does, the thing that I find kind of, like, annoying in video games, where, because I think some of it is probably it's like budgetary limitations, they reuse some of like animations like over and over.
Sure.
And so there's a moment where a character that you meet that I don't know if you've met yet, is following you around as like your companion throughout the game. And this companion has amnesia and you're trying to help them, you know,
sure.
Get their memories back. And by doing so, like, it'll kind of help you. And so, you know, the connections are so obvious, but it still goes through the motions of, like, it shows the same animation every time of the character remembering something.
Oh, okay, sure.
And then, you know what I mean? Like, that sort of stuff, where you're like, oh, that's interesting that you didn't fix that or remove that for this,
right.
like, remake. So, it's just a really weird release. It's just really weird.
Yeah. I mean, I with much less experience than you can also weigh in. Weird. It's a weird release. but I'm going to keep playing it.
Yeah, I really am.
Look,
enjoying
it. I got time this week.
Get in that.
That's not true. I got to play Minish Cap.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right. Close the writing deprivation tank. Open up the Minish Cap deprivation tank.
That's right. All right, Mark, let's. That's what we've been playing this week. Let's get into the new releases and what we might be playing next week.
On Thursday, January 25th, Apollo Justice Ace Attorney Trilogy released on Switch and other platforms.
Cool. You don't know, you've not played the Apollo Justice.
I haven't.
Games,
I haven't
right?
played this one, and I bought the Great Ace Attorney Chronicles, the one with Herlock Sholmes, that released in 2021.
On DS or on...
No,
Switch.
No, the okay. cuz you know they've been re-releasing these collections, and so I bought the Ace Attorney Chronicles, which is the first three games with those released on Switch. I bought the Great Ace Attorney Chronicles, which are like the kind of like prequel series when that released on Switch. Only played one case in that and haven't gotten any further, but I'm definitely picking up Apollo Justice. I really like the Ace Attorney's series really, I like Phoenix Wright. Those, like, first three games. Yeah. Those are the ones that I've played all of them multiple times. But I want Capcom to keep making more. And they've said that the Ace Attorney, the Ace Attorney's Chronic series is not over. So I do think a new one is in the works. And the Capcom leaks that happened probably like 2 or 3 years ago at this point, one was like penciled in at some point. So, and I think these have been selling pretty well. So I'm definitely picking this up. When I will play it, I'm not sure. But right. It's a series I really love and want to. When I was in Japan, they have like Capcom stores, and I really was hoping for some, like, they had some Ace Attorney merchandise, but it was very limited, and it wasn't really anything that I was super interested
in.
They
gotta make room for Monster Hunter stuff.
There was a ton of Monster Hunter stuff, probably unsurprisingly. But I'm glad this series can,
like,
just kind of like
Palamute.
Right? They had one of those, like, a big sword that you could take a photo with.
Sure, why not?
Yeah. Weirdly, they also, so they had a tiny bit of Ace Attorney stuff, and then they also had an even tinier bit of Ghost Trick stuff. And I now I'm regretting I didn't buy like a Ghost Trick pet.
You should have.
I should have.
You absolutely should have.
Yeah.
I also just wanted to shout out here, also on Thursday, Undernight Inbirth 2. Cis Celeste is out. That's mostly just to put a pin in the whole Undernight Inbirth series, which again we will circle back to later in the episode. Weird time for new releases here, don't you think?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like we're ready for a Nintendo Direct.
Absolutely. Do we need to talk about this now? Because like. We're let's look at the calendar, Mark. Let's bring up the calendar.
Yep.
The Nintendo Directs usually happen the second week of February, which at this point puts a Nintendo Direct like 2 weeks away.
Yeah.
Like 2 weeks from today, we could be hearing something about a new Nintendo Direct happening on the 7th or the 8th. Do we want to, or I mean, it's also possible it could be the week after. Do we want to lay down bets? $1 million bet?
Yeah, let's do it. It's been a while since we've had $1 million bet.
It's been a long time since we've had $1 million bet. When, what day, we don't have to do time, but just what day will the Nintendo Direct be?
I'll let you go first.
Okay, I'm going to say Thursday. No, Wednesday, February 7th.
Okay, I'm gonna say Wednesday, February 14th.
Okay, great.
I think they're gonna do a Valentine's Day themed Nintendo Direct. I think Miyamoto will be there wearing like a shirt of two Pikmin kissing.
I mean, I love that. Do you think they do a Nintendo Direct the week that Mario versus Donkey Kong comes out?
No, I don't think they do. No. I don't think that was a great $1 million bet on my part.
Well, it's too late.
It's in the books.
We have shaken hands. The document has been notarized. It's it's too late. That's the $1 million bet. All right. We're done with this segment. Let's close out the new releases. Which brings us to a regular segment on this show. It is time for 433. In 1952, American composer John Cage wrote a piece called 433, wherein a performer or a group of performers didn't play their instruments for 4 minutes and 33 seconds. For the purposes of this show, our instruments are talking about Nintendo. So, for the duration of one performance, 433, Mark and I'll talk about something not at all Nintendo related, thus fulfilling the contract of the piece. Mark, we're both enjoying the television show Fargo.
Yeah, season 5 just wrapped up. And I'm not caught up yet, but I'm at the finale, and I've really been enjoying it.
I did finish it. I love the series generally, and I'm really enjoyed season 5 after like kind of a slog through season 4. That's a season that I had to like stop and start and
that
stop.
Seems to be
and start
the general consensus
a couple times.
Like, I know that there's one episode. I've heard that there's one episode in there that is like Wizard of Oz. Thing,
that episode's
supposed
great
to be really good.
Yeah, and honestly, the last three episodes of the season are phenomenal. Like, and the first episode is pretty cool too. But it's like everything
half
else
of it is like,
half of it is like, and so much of just what the themes of that season are, it just like revolves around like organized crime. And I'm like, that's not what I come to Fargo for. I come to like Fargo for like the weirdo people on like the outside of that who like stumble into that life instead of like choosing it. So, yeah, it's just a tougher hang than the rest of the seasons. But regardless, we got to talking about Coen Brothers movies and being like, maybe we've only seen like half of them. So I thought we would take a which Coen Brothers movie are you quiz. So I'm on brainfall.com. Mark, I think we should probably take this together, right?
Sure.
Okay. Or do you just want to do you and we'll figure out
no,
what...
No, no, no. Let's figure out collectively which Coen Brothers movie we are.
Yeah, what Coen Brothers movie is this show? It's Burn After Reading, of course. But how would you describe your sense of humor? Laid back and observational, wacky and over the top, dark and ironic, or I don't have much of a sense of humor?
I feel like it's one of the first two.
So laid back and observational, yeah, or wacky and over the top. It's laid back and observational,
sure,
right?
Yeah, yeah. Because are we saying like wacky and over the top? It's like morning disc jockey with a sound.
You're listening to NCS.
Yeah, okay.
I think that's not
that
us.
Sounds good.
Which of these music genres is your favorite? Blues, rock, folk. I don't care for any particular genre of music.
I think we'd say rock.
That was my instinct as well. Rock is my favorite genre of music. Okay, here we go. Question number three. Which of these is your favorite pastime? Painting, hunting, bowling, playing an instrument. Let's put this in terms you would understand. Mario painting.
Thank you.
Shiny hunting.
Okay.
Wii bowling.
Uh-huh.
Or Wii music.
Oh, yeah. Well, everyone should go back and listen to our episode of Wii music that we did many years ago.
Uh-huh.
And I know that this
our most popular episode. It's the one that has the most listens by a country mile.
I guess I'm going to say Wii music.
Yeah, let's go playing an instrument. All right. Which of these is most likely to upset you? Someone ruining my home decor, losing a competition I've invested lots of time in, realizing that I had been greedy, my partner lying to my other family members about me.
Probably the last one.
That's pretty upsetting. So I will agree. Okay, question number five. Which of these states would you most like to live in? Mississippi, California, North Dakota, Texas.
California.
Yeah. We live here now. We chose it. all right. Question number six, seven, wherever we are. Which of these would most improve your life? Saving more money, learning a new skill, taking a trip, learning a new language, using AI to do all my homework for me.
I would love to learn a new language. That's something that I really wish was a skill I had.
That's great. We have to keep going.
Okay,
through the rest of these questions.
And there's what, 45 of them?
Yeah, there's 45. Well, there's 45 more questions.
Oh, right. Sorry.
No, there were 10 total, so yeah. We're almost done. Which language would you want to learn? Spanish, French, Italian, Mandarin, Chinese?
Mandarin.
Right. Going with Mandarin. Okay, keep going. What is holding you back from your dreams? Nothing. I'm free. My back pain. Ouch. Or I just don't have enough time. I gotta say it's enough time.
All right.
Come on. Wait, now it says question six? What's happening? We've answered so many questions. Maybe it's shuffling them? What motivates you to succeed? Money, my family, justice. I wouldn't say that I'm motivated to succeed. That last one for sure. Yeah, okay, we're still just on question seven. Should we press on? Or are we done?
I don't know. I feel like we are caught in some sort of like Barton Fink type maze.
I was going to say some sort of inside Llewyn Davis time loop.
Let's do two more.
Okay. Well, there's three more questions.
That can't be true if there were 10 questions.
If you could only choose one of these, what would it be? To be adored by a small group of people but disliked by many other people, to be considered good but not amazing by almost everyone, to make lots of money, or to win awards?
Huh. I don't know. What's the second option?
To be considered good but not amazing by almost everyone.
None of these are very good.
I think to be adored by a small group but disliked by disliked.
Yeah. Maybe make a lot of money.
Let's make lots of money. It feels like there's no downside to that one. All right. Question 8. We're getting there. Which of these is your biggest weakness? I struggle to make important decisions myself. I fail to consider the consequences of my actions. I'm lazy, or I lie to my friends. I struggle to make important decisions myself.
Okay, cool.
We're just locked into this now, by the way. Like, I know that this is turning into like an 866, but like we're just going here. Which of these is your favorite drink? Coca-Cola, milk, beer, a White Russian?
For me, well, I think as a show, we'd say beer.
I think you're probably right. What would you have said?
Probably Coke.
Okay. And I can't drink a Coke. It makes me crazy. And Diet Coke gives me a headache. Okay. Question number 10, the last question. Which of these quotes do you most agree with? Quote, there's more to life than a little money, you know. You can't help but compare yourself against the old timers. Heaven's everlasting, my reward. Heaven, what? Heaven everlasting is my reward. Okay. Or sooner or later, you're going to have to face the fact that you're a god. This has got a swear word in it.
No.
A GD moron.
I think the second one.
Sure, you can't help but compare yourself to the old timers.
Uh-huh.
Mark, you and I are most like the Coen Brothers movie. Calculating results, almost done. click to get your result. Okay, getting the result. Take this short survey to see your results. Do you say, okay, 35 and 44. Why are there only two genders on this quiz? It says you're making coffee at home. Do you want to brands come to mind? All right. No brands come to mind. Here we go. And then I'm just clicking. It's trying to sell me coffee. Great. None of the above, right? Just clicking through some options here. Okay, fine. Green Mountain Coffee. Fine. Yes. Yes. No. None of the above. Mark, it's not going to tell us which... how often do you consume coffee at home?
We're caught in some sort of quiz purgatory.
I don't know what's happening here.
We've done all this work.
Now I'm just lying to the survey. Oh my gosh. Okay. Come on. Come on. Come on. Come on. Come on. Where should we send your quiz result? Mark, we're never going to know. I feel like we've been cheated. No one go to that website. What was it? Brain something?
Yeah, I'm going to say that it was Burn After Reading, like you said.
Yeah. I guess we learned never to do that again. All right, Mark, let's get into the news.
Let's talk about Pal World.
Let's talk about Pal World for a second.
Or what we know about Pal World and what's going on in the world of Pal World. I haven't played it.
Yeah, and neither have I, and I don't, you know, plan to. The broad strokes of Pal World is that it was a massively successful release over the weekend, and the pitch of the game appears to just be what if Pokemon had guns?
Yeah.
But it's more of like a survival-y kind of game. But you know, the sort of like main features of the thing that I think we should talk about on this show is its stunning similarity to Pokemon. And you know, whatever accusations of like plagiarism or stolen art assets or whatever are attached to it, which is like sort of interesting, but also kind of like Nintendo's going to do what, you know, like if they're going to take legal action against it, we'll see it happen, you know, whatever. But for me, the real thing is like, why is this thing so popular, right? Like, what's because it sold 5 million copies over the weekend, and this is with it being free on Game Pass. So people are playing it for free on Game Pass and also buying 5 million copies of it, right?
Right.
It is an unqualified success, a huge hit at the beginning of the year here. Is it because it's delivering a Pokemon-like experience but without the sort of graphical jank of Pokemon? Is it because it's like a multiplayer survival sort of game? What's happening here?
Yeah, maybe it's all of the above. And I'd be super curious if there are listeners who have picked it up and have played it, kind of like what your impressions are. Because I do think the just like the catchiness of the premise,
yes,
which is, you know, like, oh, it has a really cute art style, looks very much like Pokemon. But then, you know, like, you're putting these pals to work on an assembly line to make, like, AK-47s that you're using to, like, ride into battle. You know, like, I think that kind of is hitting a sweet spot between what is very appealing about Pokemon, which, or, you know, one of the things, which is its cute art style, the fun monsters, the, like, collecting mechanic, crossed with this kind of, like, ironic... You know, you're using, instead of being, you know.
Well, and like, there's a little bit of like an edgelordiness to it.
Yeah,
There's like a Rick and Mortification of Pokemon here. I say this as someone who likes Rick and Morty, generally speaking, but like that sort of aesthetic outside of the hands of Rick and Morty is, I don't like it.
but I think that's like, that's the sell.
That's
sticky, right?
Yeah, for sure. What is interesting is that like, well, you said it has a cute art style, and like the pals themselves, the creatures are cute, right? They look like Pokemon. That's part of like where the controversy comes from. But like everything else has a sort of like semi photorealistic style that I think is lifted from like another game entirely. It seems incongruous to the like creatures that live on this island.
Yeah, but I think that some of that, like, that what you're describing is,
yeah, the, more of what's
is a selling point.
Yeah,
and
I,
not
I
like
agree.
A to me it some of like the key art and everything looks it's I don't think it is, but what it looks like to me is when you're like telling an AI photo generator to be like,
yeah,
you know, create a picture of a Pikachu riding a tank, and it would come up with something very similar to this.
Show me a Bulbasaur holding a machete with a Hitler mustache. Like it does feel like it's that sort of thing. Like what if Cards Against Humanity made a game, you know?
Yeah. But I think that it does show like an interesting I think it, in a way, like it shows the impact of Pokemon, right?
Yeah, sure.
And that they're we talk a lot about the show on this show about Pokemon as a company, the Pokemon company, and like those games and everything are manufactured to get kids when they are young. And mm-hmm. there's a new generation every 3 years, because between 6 and 12, you have 3 opportunities, you know, to hook them before they might grow too old. If, you know, there's only 2 generations that they have, you know, like all this kind of stuff. But I think that, everybody loves a Pokemon, right? Like,
yes.
Everybody loves like Pikachu, or they love Bulbasaur. Or they love, you know, like a Pokemon everybody is fond of.
Right.
And I think that this Pal World is kind of like, yeah, you've maybe aged out of Pokemon. You're not super happy with the direction of the series. You think it's a little like too much for kids. And so now here's Pal World that has a lot of the stuff you like about it, but is just a little bit more ironic about the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's that. Like, it is important that Pokemon be for kids, right? Like, that's like a core tenet of it. But it's been around for so long that a ton of those kids have grown up and are adults now, and adults want an adult Pokemon game. And I think Pal World is more borrowing aesthetics than anything else from
that's
Pokemon.
What it seems like.
It makes me wonder, like, is there there'd be a market for an adult Pokemon game, right? For like a serious, you know, not like grimdark or, you know, like hyper violent or whatever, but just like a game that plays by the rules of, you know, modern AAA video games,
yeah,
but is Pokemon.
Yep.
And I think in absence of that, we've got this Pal World thing that people are like, good enough for me, I'm gonna play it. And like, the thing is, I can understand playing the game on Game Pass, like, for the lulls, right? Like, it's very, like, memeable and silly and funny. So I can understand playing it there, but buying it because it seems like a funny, weird time? I have a harder time wrapping my head around.
Yeah, I mean, it's also only, like, $30.
Okay.
So, you know, you're not paying, like, $60. So
plus 35 for an expansion pack.
Right, exactly. And I think that the word of mouth, and it's catchy, like it's a catchy premise with catchy totally. Art, you know. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, 5 million copies, that is an incredible success.
Absolutely.
It will be really interesting to see what kind of like staying power it has.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's very, do you think that this like, we've not heard any sort of like statement out of Nintendo or the Pokemon Company or anything like that. Do you think they're paying attention to this? Do you think I always am surprised when like there are interviews with Nintendo developers and they're like, oh, was this because of this or whatever? And they're like, we don't know what that is. But like they must be paying attention, right?
Right.
And like, what kind of lesson do you think they learn from this?
I don't know that they care. Like, sure. I bet they're aware. But I wonder if, because they're like, that is not what we do, right? It's
yes.
it's filling a market that we are not interested in pursuing.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't really affect what we're working on. Like I can't imagine that they're like, oh gosh, in the next our next starter should be like a gun with a cute haircut.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I don't think they're in like panic mode. I think it's just like, oh, that's like interesting. But I can't imagine that it's like, that they feel like they've like left something out like on the table.
Yeah, yeah. No, I get what you're saying there. Do you, it's impossible to predict, instead of useless to speculate if like Nintendo's going to pursue any kind of legal action or, you know, whatever. This to me feels like a way different situation than when they shut down like, you know, fan remakes or, you know, whatever. Because like, designs can be very similar and like not that, you know, may not matter at all as far as like copyright issues are concerned.
Yeah, I think so. And like what, because yeah, they're like stylistically similar. You could argue in some ways like the PALs are, but it feels distinct enough. I mean, I remember, I've never heard this said out loud, so I apologize if I'm saying it wrong, but like Genshin Impact.
Yeah.
When that game was first, another massively successful game, when that game was first released, there was a lot of comparisons to the Breath of the Wild.
Right.
And just being like, oh, this looks like they ripped off Breath of the Wild. Nothing ever came of that. You know what I mean? It's
yeah.
not like, yeah.
And I do think it's funny that like it then just allows both things to be massively successful.
Yeah.
Right? Like, because Genshin Impact is a huge moneymaker for whoever makes Genshin Impact. And like Pal World seems to be like super successful. And the next Pokemon game, guess what? It'll be super successful.
Yeah, because they're totally different audiences.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Two things we generally don't talk about that much. One, that we've in a way sworn off talking about entirely.
Sworn it off.
And yet, here we are.
Here we go.
Lego sets and rumors. A known and accurate Lego leaker,
mm-hmm.
1414 Falcon fan, revealed that a Lego Zelda The Great Deku Tree set is in the works and could be coming out September of this year.
Which is a fascinating prospect, because what does this mean? Like, we've had these Lego Mario sets for a while, right? And there are all these like other sort of like prestige-y, sort of like nice Nintendo Lego sets that are not like, you know, not playing that same sort of game. But like, is this the start of a Lego Zelda set?
Right. And here's what the rumors say it's going to include. So this September, apparently the set will consist of 2,500 pieces,
mm-hmm.
Where you can build not one, but like two versions of the tree could be built. One that has green leaves, or it could also have cherry blossoms. And then in addition to the tree, the set is rumored to also contain some minifigures of characters from the games, including Link, who is said to come with a new, like, Hylian Shield Lego piece.
That's pretty cool. 2,500 pieces?
2,500.
2,500 pieces. So, like, is it, like, the like a cross-section where, like, you're inside the tree, or...
I don't know. Or are you just building, like, the outside of the tree? Right. Well, here's something that's interesting, is that almost 2 years ago exactly, so February 1st, 2023, there was an article in The Verge about how a Legend of Zelda Lego set might be coming. And this is from Promo Bricks, which is, according to The Verge, one of the foremost Lego leakers.
Yeah.
Is saying that
we're gathering all the Lego leakers. One like Infinity Stones.
One was in development. Uh-huh. And it's reportedly a 2-in-1 set based on the Great Deku Tree. And again, this was a year ago.
Wow.
February 1st, 2023. A member of the Euro Bricks Forum named Jean Grey Forever claims to have been part of a paid survey where they were shown upcoming Lego sets and asked how much they'd be willing to pay for them. But Promobricks says they were able to obtain images of the survey from Jean Grey Forever and they looked legit. So this is how Jean Grey Forever describes the set.
Perfect.
Be like $200 to $325, probably $250. It's a 2-in-1 model based on the Great Deku Tree. Just to clarify, I'm not a Zelda fan. Blah, blah, blah. There were two images of the set because they give you enough pieces to make two versions of the tree. Just to clarify on the 2-in-1 aspect, it appears to be the same model, which you can redress to make it look different. One of the trees was specifically labeled as designed from the Breath of the Wild game, whereas the other came from Ocarina of Time. And there's like an opening underneath that had pink flowers. The version had no opening under the other version. So one version had an opening underneath the branches and had pink flowers. The other version had no opening underneath the tree's face and had green leaves instead. Whichever tree you make is featured on a base with the Zelda logo on it. The minifigures, I recognize one as Link. The other two minifigures I didn't recognize, so I had to look them up. And it seems like they're Link and Zelda from Breath of the Wild because they both look like they're wearing blue. There's also a light blue orb covered in white with a clear stand. So basically, this is being reported again.
Right.
When, like a year ago, it seems like they were doing research on this and maybe not much has changed.
So, this may be more in line with like the sort of like prestige sets, right? Especially $250, right? Like
that's the rumored price. Yeah, something around there.
Yeah, so that's more like you're buying like the Hogwarts set and like building the whole, you know, thing, and less like Mario and he's like jumping over Koopas or whatever.
Right. So it doesn't sound like they have like the electronic faces or, you know, like what does Luigi do if Mario's not there?
No, it's the other way around. Is that before Luigi even came out, the Mario character would be like, "Where's my brother?"
Oh yeah, okay. You should buy him.
I'm so sad if you don't spend $27 on a Luigi.
So yeah, it doesn't seem like there's any of that here.
Right.
But it could be cool. And also, I think we called a moratorium on Lego Mario reporting, but Lego Zelda, that's a whole new avenue.
That's right. We were very specific in that moratorium. So,
more leaks. Noted Atlas leaker, MBKKSSTBHZ5,
mm-hmm,
is saying that Persona 3 Reload and Metaphor ReFantazio, which are two Atlas games that were announced for basically all other platforms except Switch,
not Switch,
are headed to the Switch successor. And so that's why we have not heard about them on Nintendo platforms yet.
There we go. Which could well be the case for anything that we see announced for like current generation hardware in the next couple months until the next version of the Switch is officially revealed. That like won't be coming to the Switch, but maybe the next thing.
Uh-huh.
And I guess like I think we are both sort of the opinion that the next Switch is going to be just a more powerful version of the Switch. But, you know, I guess we've not really like nailed in how we feel about, we think backwards compatible for sure, but the sort of idea of like forwards compatibility, will all games that come out for the new Switch also be playable on the old one? Sounds like if this rumor is true, no.
Yeah. Sounds right? Like
there
no.
will be new Switch exclusives.
Yep. Which makes sense, especially probably totally. For third parties who are maybe the Switch is too old for them to target it as a system for development, but the new one they feel more comfortable porting to.
Yeah.
But just another, you know, like twig in the growing like,
nest.
Nest. Yeah, that is, hey. We're due for new Nintendo hardware.
We're due
soon.
For it, yeah.
Speaking of which, mm-hmm. what percentage of developers are currently working on games bound for the Switch successor? A new survey from the GDC State of the Industry, I'm assuming that's Game Developers Conference, yeah. State of the Industry, says that just 8% of the 3,000 developers that were surveyed said their game is for the Switch successor.
Which is... interesting depending on like how the survey is worded, but just the 8% feels low to me.
Well, I'm thinking like from the Game Developers Conference, that's a wide net.
Sure.
And 3,000 developers is, I'm assuming, a lot of indie developers.
Totally.
Right? So right. a lot of that is probably like PC focused. Mm. And if you narrowed it down to I don't know if this survey includes, you know, like big companies right. like Capcom or because if you think of like there have been a lot of games developed for Switch, excluding indie games, but the number of companies that have published is probably in the low hundreds.
Yeah, sure.
You know, like
sure.
100, 200. So 3,000, I think, is a lot of people to be surveying.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and like I also trying to square it with the thing that we had read the other day about Nintendo seeking out like new partners to sort of like fill the gaps in the early lineup for the new Switch. And yeah, so I guess maybe this is just one of those things where like it feels like the numbers are inconclusive, right? Like
right.
Because I think that when even if there are going to be exclusive new Switch games, like games for the new Switch, I think they're going to continue to put out games that are going to be like kind of cross-generation for a while, right? And especially from third parties, I think people are going to want that like massive Switch install base and just make sure that their games are playable on both.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and I don't think that when the new hardware comes out, especially like third parties are going to just like stop development
right.
on the Switch for right. a while. And because it has that huge install base, also the thing isn't announced yet. So the fact that 8% say they're working on something is like,
yeah,
that's a remarkable number of developers yeah. working on something that hasn't been released yet, especially because I'm guessing that a lot of them don't have official dev kits.
Right. So they're just like guessing.
Guessing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or they're getting the survey and they're like, yeah, my game would be great on the next Switch.
Well, interesting. You have written down here that 18% said they're working for Switch. So, like, I would say 8% when a total of 18% are saying they're currently working on Switch is not that bad.
Yeah.
As is frequently the case with the recently Nintendo published remakes and remasters, like, for example, Super Mario RPG Remake.
Yep.
We didn't actually know that who the developer of that was, which is like Arte Piazza.
Yes. Intel. Who does the Dragon Quest remakes.
Right. That yeah. they were responsible for the Super Mario RPG remake until the game released. We had no idea who was developing the Another Code Recollection remake until it released. But now we know, it was revealed on social media that developer Arc System Works was behind it.
And this is where I take the pin out of earlier in the episode when I placed it on the in-birth whatever those games are called.
Yeah.
That's they make a lot of like anime fighting games.
Under Night 2
Thank
in-birth
you.
In Cis Celeste. Colon Celeste.
Yeah, Cis Celeste.
Uh-huh.
And it's like System Celeste,
uh-huh,
right?
Yeah.
But so yeah, these guys make a lot of like fighters and they've to my knowledge have not made a Nintendo game before.
So one thing that's interesting that I was reading when this was revealed is that Sing, C-I-N-G, was the original developer of Another Code. they've closed for many years. But apparently a lot of the developers, or many developers from Sing, are now at Arc Systems Works.
Oh, interesting.
And so many that worked on this remake had worked on the original like DS and Wii titles when they were working at Sing. So maybe that's the connection that brought Arc System Works into it.
Which is and this is something that like feels like it is part of the Nintendo reaching out for like new partners and like why can't a company like Arc System Works make a first party Nintendo game? Like there's kind of no reason not to tap all these great assets, especially if they're people that have worked with Nintendo before, like through Sing.
To celebrate and also publicize the release of Prince of Persia: The Lost Crown, developers from Ubisoft Montpellier held a Q&A session on the Metroidvania subreddit over the weekend.
Hold on, I just got to subscribe to the Metroidvania
subreddit. I know,
subreddit.
I didn't know that was a thing. They were asked if there was an IP or franchise that they wanted to make a game using, and senior game designer Remy Bouton said they would love in all caps, to make a Zelda game. Specifically calling their desire to make a strange, quote, strange spinoff based on Adventure of Link.
Okay, now let's, because this is simultaneously the most obvious and the craziest answer possible. A, we'd make a Zelda game, no kidding. B, it'd be based on Zelda 2? I love this.
One for the freaks.
Yeah, one for a niche product for weirdos.
Yeah, that's right.
I love this. Please give me the Saga of Error, or just a random dungeon generator that's just those orange guys with the axes.
Or it's one of these in-game card games.
No, come on, I'll never play it.
Finally, a Splatoon 3 map, Mincemeat Metalworks, is currently out of rotation in the game. The stage has been down since Sunday, January 21st, and will return today, January 23rd at 6 p.m. Pacific. They're making some changes to the map, but in a adorable, typical for Splatoon fashion, they've stated the invert universe reason for the closure is, quote, for inventory and on-site inspection.
I love that they're saying that it's closed. Uh-huh. Like, we had to close it for an inspection, and like their graphics up on the like Nintendo Twitter and the Splatoon Twitter, where it's like there's like construction and they're like the little inspection things. It's just very adorable that they have an in-universe reason why this stage is being like retooled or debugged or something like that.
Yeah, very cute.
We don't know what's happening to the stage, right? But do we think it is just like fixes, or
I think that they're making some I've read like the headline. I haven't dug into it, but I think they're making some changes based on like player feedback or just generally for playability.
Well, I'm glad that they had to close it down for inventory and on-site inspection. All right, Mark, let's get out of the news. That is going to do it for this episode of Nintendo Cartridge Society. Remember, you should be in our Discord. Email us for an invitation, and I will send it to you. Anthony DeLuca made our logo. Our theme music is provided by 8BitBetty. You can get more of his music by going to 8BitBetty.com or by listening right now. For my co-host, Mark Mitchell, this is Patrick Ehlers, saying thank you for listening.